Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I've got Chris McNeeney on the line. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Jeff.
All right, we are on Zoom because it's January 2022, and there's been an Omicron surge, and Chris has a busy life, and he can't afford for me to expose him. I actually was on a cruise ship last week, so I don't want to expose Chris to whatever filthy people I was around. So we're on Zoom, so if you don't like the audio quality, my apologies. But talking to Chris because his film, More Than He Knows, was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November 2021. And it's a fantastic film. And if you want to see it, go to YouTube right now and search for, or go to the Discover Indie Film website. There'll be a link to it. But if you don't want to go to the discoverindiefilm.com, search for More Than He Knows, bisexual comedy.
Yeah, bisexual comedy short film.
Bisexual comedy short film. You're bound to get it. And maybe some other interesting stuff. I don't know. I'll have to try it out. But this episode we just recorded an interview with Chris all about his career and his work. And now we're just going to have fun with the four questions. And the Discover Indie four questions are: favorite films of all time, a film that's underrated, a film that's overrated, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. This is just a fun thing I do at the end of interviews because I had a friend who was a professional drummer who would always go on Facebook and say, who's the most overrated band of all time? And then there'd be a huge argument. And so, I don't know, it's just kind of fun to talk about film this way. So I am going to shut up and let Chris start answering with his favorite films.
All right. Top three favorite films. Number one, The Empire Strikes Back.
I made a face, by the way. We're on Zoom. People can see the face I made.
The face, I can describe the face because I got to see it. It was kind of like excitement and like, oh, yes. That's how I interpreted it. Number two, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
I'm going to interrupt and say that film is perfect. That film is one of the best made films of all time. I'm with you.
I don't think I've ever laughed as hard as when the first song came up. Can we swear on this podcast?
Of course.
Okay. When Uncle Fucker came up, I can remember laughing so hard at a movie that I was crying. The tears were coming down because it was just brilliant in every way.
One of the best musicals ever made. One of the best films ever made. One of the smartest films ever made.
Yes.
And Uncle Fucker was, it's funny because I remember that they wanted, I forget what the original title was, but the studio rejected it. So they changed to Bigger, Longer, Uncut, which was, of course, the funniest penis reference ever that the studio missed. And I always had the feeling like they wrote the song Motherfucker, and the studio said, sorry, we won't release a song called Motherfucker. And somehow they approved of Uncle Fucker.
I mean, that's so gold that, like, the studio probably missed, right, Bigger, Longer, Uncut being the biggest penis reference ever, literally. And that movie set the record for the most amount of swears in a movie at the time, which is another just feather in their cap. All right, you ready for number three?
Yeah.
Number three is Three Billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
That's just an incredible film. Yeah. Well, good choices. My Empire Strikes Back face, I'll confess, I love Star Wars, which is now called A New Hope. And then now that I've gone back and watched them with a kid, I feel like Empire is where George Lucas already starts to take a bad turn towards Jedi and the prequels. I actually have fallen out of love with Empire. But
oh, wow. I'll have to check that out.
Many a friend who say it's the best Star Wars film ever made, and I respect people's opinions. But for me, it's where things start to go wrong.
Interesting. I haven't seen it in a while, so I'd be kind of curious to see what I think of it now. Interesting.
Yeah, well, you should maybe revisit. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to talk you into not loving that film, though.
Oh, no. But just, it would be interesting to see it as a perspective. It's probably been like 10 years since I saw it.
For sure. And Three Billboards. Okay, I'm blanking on his name, but he's one of the greatest writers of our time.
Let me consult my...
Sorry, I can't pause. I don't edit these anymore.
Is it McDonough?
Yeah, Kevin McDonough. Yeah, who did Seven Psychopaths and In Bruges. And yeah, yeah. Oh, that film was so good.
Martin McDonagh. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
He's brilliant.
All right. Excellent choices. We can jump into underrated.
Underrated. Labyrinth.
You know, this is the most embarrassing thing I can. I'm always embarrassed when I haven't seen a film.
Oh, yeah.
I am like one of the biggest Bowie fans in the world, and I still haven't seen that.
Oh my gosh, that is sacrilege. Even if you're not religious, that's sacrilege.
I know. I've seen that film he was in, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, or whatever, and I love his acting. I love when Bowie acted.
I mean, Labyrinth is really interesting because I don't know how much you know about it, but when it came out, it did not do well. It pretty much tanked. It also came out at a rough time. It was the same weekend as Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Top Gun, Legal Eagles, Karate Kid Part 2, like so many. I just was looking it up, you know, for this podcast. And I thought, oh man, no wonder why it came in like eighth in its first weekend. It had all these big hits that it was up against. And I think it was seen as like a little intense, kind of like The Dark Crystal was for Jim Henson, you know, at the time. But then through home video and DVD sales, it gained this cult following. And now it's been reappraised as like quite a bit better than it was reviewed when it came out. And it really, Jim Henson's son said how it really sank his father into a depression. But luckily, Jim Henson died in 1990, and I think this came out in 86. He said even by 1990, it was kind of being reappraised as, you know, a better work than it was originally received as. Which
I can't believe that's right. The years just blow me away. I think the reason I never saw Labyrinth is it came out my freshman year of college when you just weren't into going to the movies.
Oh, right.
You remember when Jim Henson died when I was a college senior. Oh, my God.
So you've got to see it. You know, it's Jennifer Connelly in her kind of breakout role. It's not that it's a perfect movie, right? Like you can see that it's got some flaws, but just the sheer imagination and creativity, and it has so much going for it that I just feel like it really never got its full due.
Look, I'm proof. I'm a movie fan and a massive Bowie fan, and I haven't seen it. My God.
Yeah, you got to check it out.
All right, I will check it out for sure. And I'll just mention, if anyone else is a Bowie fan, you really have to see John Landis's film, Into the Night.
Okay.
No one has seen Into the Night, and oh my God, it's amazing. And Bowie is an amazing hitman murderer in it. So anyway.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I will shut up and let you answer overrated.
Okay. Overrated. I'm fascinated to see what your reaction is going to be to this, because this is a polarizing one. Uncut Gems.
Yeah. I've only seen half of it and I wasn't impressed.
Listen, that was one of maybe the only movie I've ever walked out of a theater. My partner and I, we both just were looking at each other like, I think I don't think we even made it halfway through. Just couldn't.
It's funny because I saw the second half. I can tell you it doesn't. And I actually like, you know, I mean, I was a big Adam Sandler fan in the early years. And, you know, I get that, you know, the quality kind of petered out as he just like cranks out films for the sake of making them. I don't know what to say about Adam, but like I'm a Punch Drunk Love, huge fan of Punch Drunk Love.
Exactly.
I love when Adam and Spanglish, I love when Adam Sandler would step out of the comedy world, but Uncut Gems, something about it just didn't.
It was just very grating and irritating and just not something I enjoyed it at all. I just didn't want to spend any time with the characters. And I agree with you. I like Adam Sandler. Even I understand the criticism, but like loved him on SNL and, you know, I've loved a lot of his movies and just say, okay, yeah, he's made some that are not great, but whatever. In other words, it wasn't the Adam Sandler, like who Adam Sandler is, that was an issue. It just is what this movie was. I thought, how is this?
Yeah, in fact, he did a great job as that.
Exactly.
Classic New York jeweler, Jewish guy who wears a tracksuit. Yeah. Yeah. His acting was great in it. It's just, Yeah, I think it is one of those films. I don't know. Remember when Breaking Bad sort of inspired Hollywood to say, oh, this is the era of the anti-hero. We can have flawed lead characters.
Right.
Heroic. But they still have to be compelling in some way.
Exactly. Yeah, it just, I agree with you. I think Adam Sandler did his job very well for what he was asked to do. It's just the whole thing. Like, I remember we both walked out and we were like, that was just a really unpleasant experience. And not even in like a good way, not even like a, oh, I see what they're doing and it's so gritty. It just was, whoa, I want to shake that off.
It is a funny line because obviously if I was talking to the filmmakers, it was made by a pair of brothers or something, I think. But if they said, yeah, we wanted to make it really unpleasant so you knew how unpleasant his life was, I'm like, well, you accomplished what you're after. But it is always an interesting thing when the goal of the creators is to make the audience displeased.
Right.
And uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And it's funny, too, because like Three Billboards is another polarizing movie, right? Some people really did not like that. I think if you don't like dark comedy, it's not your thing. And it certainly has some of it. And I don't like all dark comedy, but I thought that was just so well done. And, you know, just such good storytelling, performances, and the dark comedy is justified.
I suppose it is dark. It's funny. I don't even think of it as dark comedy. I just think of it as brilliant human storytelling. But yeah, yeah, it is. It is, of course, funny. And it is dark. And there's a lot of pain in it. And Lord knows Frances McDormand is perfect. And
yep.
As a hero, she is a flawed hero because she's actually quite in the wrong in many ways.
Yep.
Oh, that's a great film. I could watch that film over and over.
Oh, gosh. I agree.
Did it win Best Picture or did it not get Best Picture?
I don't think it won Best Picture. I think she got Best Actress.
She got Best Actress. I was so mad when it didn't win. Whatever, what I can't remember now what beat it, but
yeah.
I was furious when it didn't win.
I remember that too, actually. I was thinking that really deserved it.
Yeah. All right, well, we only got one question left, which is a lesser-known film to seek out. And of course, okay, You've already put me in the position where I got to watch Labyrinth, but probably another one I'm going to have to watch.
Well, actually, I bent the rules a little bit on this one because these are films that I had to pick two. I just couldn't pick one. And there are two films that are on the film festival circuit right now that are going to be released. And I just think they really deserve it. So one of them is called A Sexplanation. It's a documentary feature. And the other one is called Malibu Horror Story.
And is it horror?
Funny enough, it is. And, you know, Sexplanation is basically one Asian American's journey into kind of accepting his homosexuality and looking at where he came from with his own traditional Asian parents and how we view sex in the U.S. and how it affects our relationships. Just incredibly well done. Fast paced, fun, you know, great animation, just moves right along. Hour and 20 minutes, it flies by. And Malibu Horror Story is just a really good horror movie. And like I said before on our other podcast, I mean, I'm not a big horror person per se, but I just saw this at a festival and it just was so good. It took the found footage storyline and gives it a new twist and just kind of worked on every level. Had that right blend of comedy and scariness and not just kind of gratuitous gore. It just was riveting. I thought it was just amazing. So both of them should be coming out on streaming services, I would think.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I love that. I love when films that resonate with audiences at the festival level. I can tell you there's films I saw 30 years ago at a festival that I still remember as just like great little films that some got a bit of a release, some more direct to video, and some I think just disappeared for good. Like I can't even find them, but.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I feel like it's such a kind of a crapshoot of what ends up happening with them and luck and timing and maybe business acumen of the filmmakers, but it's all of those things, right?
And definitely timing, right? Because now, thanks to Prime Direct or iTunes, like an indie feature it costs you some money to get it on iTunes, but if you go through the effort of encoding and everything, like, it's sort of there, I think, for good. Like yeah. An indie feature, like, you can always pay $6.99 or whatever to see it.
Sure.
To my deficit, I only watch stuff that's included with Prime and Netflix and HBO. Yeah. But 30 years ago, if you didn't get a home video deal, you just disappeared.
Right. So it is certainly more, there are more options now.
For sure. It's just such a crowded marketplace. It's so hard to get the eyeballs.
Yep.
For sure. All right. Well, excellent picks. I have no more comment. Do you want to tell people how they can catch your film More Than He Knows, especially if they enjoyed your list, they should check out More Than He Knows.
Sure. Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime, and I just put it on YouTube, which is where I'm trying to direct people to see it, just to, you know, get the traffic going on it. It might not be listed in YouTube searches. Take a little while to pop up, but it's just More Than He Knows, bisexual comedy short film is, if you just enter that in, I imagine it would pop up. And yeah, it's got its own YouTube channel. Same thing, More Than He Knows, bisexual comedy short film. Or I think the channel's listed as like LGBTQIA short film. So it's on YouTube. And I'll send you a link too, Jeff.
Excellent. And I'll add that the version on YouTube is what I jokingly called in the previous podcast, I said it's the sexy as heck version. And if you want to see the sexy as fuck version, it'll be in season 5 of the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. Probably coming out in March. Could be earlier though. I think I almost have enough shorts together for the next season. So, but every 6 months or so, a new season of Discover Indie Film comes out, and that's a TV series on Prime Video that you can watch. It's short films handpicked from the festival circuit. I'm going to go on my spiel now because you heard about Chris's stuff. So that's discoveryindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's @DIFWINS. And like I said, just go to Amazon Prime Video on a big TV, not on your phone, and search for Discover Indie Film. And it comes up. We've got 10 seasons. Like I said, season 5 coming soon with Chris's film More Than He Knows in there. And More Than He Knows was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November. We hold that festival every November. And we were in the theaters last November, and I believe we'll be in the theaters from now on. And you can learn about that festival if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com or on social media, it's @ShermanOaksFF. And there's a sister festival, Film Invasion LA, FilmInvasionLA.com. It's every June, and it's @FilmInvasionLA on social media. And you know what I forgot to say last time was the old, hey, subscribe, review, like. If you're listening to this podcast, be nice and give it 5 stars wherever you're watching it. If you want to be a really nice person, go on Amazon.com. I don't think most Prime Video doesn't let you review, so you actually have to take the effort of going on to Amazon.com to review. But I am open to people giving wonderful 5-star reviews on Amazon.com for the Discover Indie Film TV series. In fact, I often joke that the TV series has about 20-25 films per season. So that's 20-25 filmmakers per season. And so after 4 seasons, there's about 100 filmmakers involved. And I think the series has about 20-30 reviews. Which means not even all the filmmakers are bothering to review. So shame on me for letting that slide. I should really give people a hard time. And sure. This podcast too is, I believe Chris is going to come out the second week of January. These episodes will hit. And there's been over 100 filmmakers on the Discover Indie Film podcast. And I haven't looked, but I bet on iTunes, there's not a whole lot of reviews. People just don't bother reviewing. So I try to remember to ask for it. And now I have asked for it. I've become a review whore, as I like to say. All right, Chris, any last words?
No, thank you so much. This was great.
All right. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, everyone who listened.